met Andrew a while back through a mutual sort of business acquaintance, and when I was dealing with them, they obviously saw that I was visually impaired, and they had mentioned that they were working with somebody who had developed an alternative to Braille, and would I be interested in speaking with them. And the person, they put me in touch with Andrew Chapitis, and he came up from New York, and I met with him, and he sent me materials for the Braille alternative. Shamefully, I have not learned Braille, and so I just thought it would be interesting to see what this alternative was and, you know, how it would work for me or for other people. And so Andrew came up, he'd given me the materials, and literally within, I'd say, 2 or 3 hours, you know, I was able to read the alphabet and do some simplified sentences, and I never got that far in Braille. I continued to stay in touch with Andrew and thought it might be interesting, particularly to a group here of primarily many of you are fluent in Braille, and so I thought it'd be an interesting thing for Andrew to present this and get the viewpoint of this group of people who have a very diverse background using Braille or not.
My name is Andrew Chapitis. Myself and a handful of other people developed a new alphabet that's designed for people who had sight, read visually, and then they lost their sight. And it's basically a standard alphabet font, but we've redesigned the standard alphabet so that a person can read it tactily. We use the major characteristics of the alphabet and incorporate those elements into a frame. So the alphabet, we tested it versus the regular alphabet raised, and we tested it versus Braille at a number of font sizes. Once we'd finished testing it, we identified that it was an improvement over just the standard raised alphabet, and that for previously sighted people, it offered benefits over Braille. We realized that it's not of any value to anyone unless we have a tactile output technology. So we're developing printers that can print graphical information. It could print a spreadsheet or a map of Texas or the United States or a diagram of an amoeba or what have you. So we're developing the tactile printers so that people can access tactile graphical information. And it could print anything that you can print with a laser printer or an inkjet printer. And then we're also creating a full screen tactile display. And we've licensed some technology, some patents from the Department of Commerce, and we've developed a prototype that works pretty well. We even demonstrated it to Andrea Bocelli, the opera singer, who invited us to meet him in New York, and so we brought the whole prototype and we showed it to him. It can produce a few lines of Braille text, but he was able to read on it, and you can display graphical information, so you could display a dove or a boat or Braille or a chart or a graph. And so all of our technology, while it's meant to support our tactile alphabet, it's also very much meant to support Braille. And we're kind of agnostic about what font a person uses. If someone came up with a new font that was better than our font, then our technology would certainly support that because it supports any graphical representation of an image. Anyway, so I'm going to hand out sheets of the alphabet, we can discuss it, and I can answer questions about it. Recently, we were awarded a grant from the National Institute of Health to develop a printer. We've won a few other grants to develop the tactile display and a different printing technology. And so the printer is kind of close to market now because it's a large grant, about $1.2 million. And so in the next year, hopefully, we would be commercializing and offering that tactile printer. As part of that grant, we are engaging potential users to identify what features and user interface they would recommend. And so if people from Vibug are interested, at a later time we could engage you guys, and it's a paid interview. I'm just going to take a couple of minutes to hand out the pages if you want to see them.
On the top left-hand side is the letter A, okay. And then it goes A, B, C, D, and then the next line would be E through N, and the next line would be O through P and T through Z.
So these are just small letters.
What we started with was, we started with some industrial design principles that state that a symbol should build on a person's existing knowledge, and that it's helpful to use a frame so that a person can tell where one symbol begins and one symbol ends. We tested our initial design, and we identified that there were some adjustments that needed to be made. And this is basically our alphabet optimized.
So the first four letters, A through D, are circular and they have an opening in them. The reason for that is we originally had just all circular letters, and when we tested this versus the Roman alphabet, we found that the letter C was actually better than the symbol that we had come up with. So we decided to incorporate kind of the letter C into the first four letters of the alphabet, and that eliminated some confusions with letters that are later in the alphabet. So A through D are circular letters.
The B and the C look very similar.
Yeah,
they are. They are very similar. So the B looks a little bit like a baseball. It's got two seams in the inside. The way the B has two elements, this has two elements. Tactile reading is a bit like looking through frosted glass, so you can't see everything, and it kind of melts into itself. The letter A has a peaked letter in it, an upside-down V, if you will, in a circular letter that has an opening in the bottom. The letter B has two lines that are horizontal, and it has an opening on the right-hand side. And the letter C is just pretty much an open letter C. There's a small dot at the upper portion, and that tells a person now how you're just at the edge of that opening. And in these, and so the letter C, you can find the standard alphabet letter C. In the letter D, there's an opening on the lower left-hand side, but you can also feel a capital letter D in that symbol.
Yeah.
And in the majority of these, you can trace the Roman alphabet, the standard alphabet letter symbol, and that's one thing that we try very hard to do. The letter E has a line that's directly across, and you can find the letter E in there.
That's the second line down.
And this is the second line down, right. The first symbol on the left is an E.
Why would that not be confused with somebody who knew the printed alphabet, right, with the letter B?
Because it's a square. We've divided the alphabet into different frames. So A through D are circular, and O through S are circular letters, and the other 17 letters are square. So if you come about a circle, you know it's either A through D or O through S, and those 9 letters are actually used about 50% of the time in text. So the alphabet is divided somewhat in terms of use. The F and the H are very somewhat related in that there's a horizontal line that's high in the letter F, which is the second symbol on that second line. And so you can feel a letter F in that symbol.
What was your logic for the letter G? I'm interested in the G, because that doesn't seem at all like a print.
You can trace the capital letter G in there if you feel the tail on the inside and then follow the line down across the bottom, up, and then across the top. That's somewhat of a letter G. We tested a number of frame designs, and we found that if we opened the square letters in any way, shape, or form, that people would get lost. Whereas if you open a circular letter, for whatever reason, people don't get lost on that symbol. They can continue moving. The letter G, we found that this symbol was one of the easiest letters to feel. We reincorporated it into other letters. For example, our letter M was a square with a triangle on the top, and our W was a square with a triangle on the bottom. If you can envision a W would have kind of a up-down. So we wanted to use the up-down, but those were commonly confused with the letters F and H. So I'll just move on past the letter G. The letter H is a low bar, so you can feel kind of two lines down the lower part. The letter I is just a dot in the middle, much like the small I has a small dot, has a dot in it. And that dot is very helpful. When we tested Braille, the letter A was identified with almost 100% accuracy because a dot is very tangible. So we tried to use a dot when we could. The letter J has a small barb in the bottom portion, in the bottom left-hand side. And if you follow that barb down, then across the bottom, and then up the right-hand side, that's kind of a letter J. The letter K has a K in it. It's got kind of a sideways V attached to the left-hand side. The letter L is an open square. You can trace the capital letter L. The letter M is very much like the letter G, as I mentioned, but it's got a barb in the top. That we found to be more tangible than if we put a triangle in there. We tried basically to get as much out of the corners as possible because it's more difficult to feel things in the corners. The letter N has a diagonal, and you can feel a capital letter N. I'll just go through the letters O through S, and then I'll stop describing it. O is just a circle. P is a circle with a diagonal right across, and that's because there is only one element to a P versus a B.
And by the way, these letters are made with some substance added.
We've modified a Tektronix Phaser 300 printer. We
incorporated some technology that was developed at the National Federation of the Blind to modify that printer so that it can layer wax, layers up to 18 layers of wax onto the page, and it gives you a very nice definition image. Problem with this is that if you wiggle the page too much, the wax pops off. And it, we have extra printers of those if an institution wants one, because it can print Braille or it can print graphical information. The alphabet is made up of frames that are either circular or square, and then there are also numbers which look like a home plate at a baseball game or a house. They have that kind of a, they kind of have a roof. They're square with a roof. We tested a number of other frame shapes, and this was the one that people were found easiest to identify. There was a question about capital letters, and a capital letter has a dot over these symbols, and that's what denotes a capital letter. The U and the V are somewhat similar. When a person is feeling those, if someone confuses a V or a U, it's typically with the other one. This alphabet can be presented at whatever font size a person needs. This is the size that we've found to be helpful for a person learning it, but then it can be as small as standard Braille size if a person's tactile acuity allows for that. Our study showed that a person could learn raised alphabet symbols, just the standard raised alphabet, but their accuracy was fairly...
Let's say Bob wants to label his spices. How would he do that using your system?
So we're developing a printer that uses swell paper and would have an adhesive back to that swell paper, and we would have pre-cut labels that he could print onto. So he would print labels out of a printer that we're developing.
Okay, and the swell paper, that's the paper that's got some, it's got plastic in it, right?
It's kind of got plastic, yeah. It's got like a plastic, a plastic coating on it.
Right.
How is the accuracy at the smallest?
Accuracy declines with the size. So our take is that it should be as large as the person needs it to be. We've tested this alphabet versus Braille at a number of font sizes. We found that for previously studied people who are learning Braille, we tested it at 0.7 centimeters, which is very close to standard Braille. We found that if we increase the font size by just 2.2 centimeters, that a person's reading speed could double. And if we increased it by another 0.2 centimeters, their reading speed could double yet again.
Your printer, will it print Braille?
It will print Braille, yeah.
Does those wax on this have a color? Is there a color?
It's red, actually.
It's red.
But I could print. We could print it in any color. We've programmed the printer to print a maximum raise in red.
Have you tried the regular alphabet in a simple font?
Yes, we have.
Because my experience has been that if somebody has trouble learning Braille, they could easily use the regular alphabet, like with foam letters or things like that.
Sure.
So I was wondering why a new alphabet and not why just the standard alphabet that they're used to.
One could look at this as the standard alphabet and it's simply redesigned. We tested this versus the standard alphabet raised, and after a few hours, people were more accurate in identifying these letters than they were with the standard alphabet. When a letter is printed, it typically uses a rectangular space. What we found with tactile reading is that what is needed is that all of the elements of that letter should be pushed out to the furthest reaches of the space that it's using. If you're using a square space, you want a square with a few elements on the inside, and that's helpful to people.
The thing that was really helpful about this system was is that, the frames, because it was a circle and a square, and was, I knew the universe of possibilities. Once I understood what they represented, I knew the possibilities very quickly, what it could be. That made an enormous difference in terms of recognition. But you don't get that if you have a whole raised alphabet.
You could label appliances or spiced goods, or you could print extended text.
Can a sighted person look at this and know what these letters are?
The nice thing about it is that a sighted person can learn it in about a couple minutes. If you have a spouse or a parent or a child who wants to read along, then they can read along.
Well, there's so many people who don't use Braille who in former times would have learned it, but because the learning curve is so much and because there's so many alternatives now, a lot of people don't learn Braille.
Yeah.
Are you seeing this as something because the learning curve is easier, that for certain applications, people who wouldn't be learning Braille would start to use this?
Yes.
I'm guessing that you're not anticipating people would really be able to book this way.
I think once we develop a tactile display, that people will read all books of this. I think it'll be very fast. We looked at the research on people who were previously sighted and learned Braille. The reading speed that was reported was about 25 words per minute after maybe 12 years of reading, if you're previously sighted. People got to 25 words per minute reading this. in a couple weeks. So versus years versus weeks, we think that people might read it on an extended text.
What, I'm just curious, because you've mentioned a couple times this full-page display. What do you project the cost of such a display would cost on the open market?
We would start off with a display that probably had 10,000 to 20,000 pins, and we'd probably charge the same amount as for a standard Braille display. And then we'd hopefully reduce, as we had more people using it, we could reduce the cost.
One of our printing technologies utilizes Hewlett-Packard inkjet printing components. And I know that my HP printer can print on both sides of the page. Mm-hmm. So we could theoretically get the HP print on both sides of a page and then erase those lines with heat. The paper would require a chemical coating, and then that chemical coating would react to heat.
I'd like to know, how does it test in terms of people with neuropathy?
We had test participants who were from the age of 21 all the way to the age of 85. And the 85-year-old had to read this at a large font size, and she still had a great deal of difficulty. And in looking at the kind of the research literature, we identified that people lose their tactile acuity at about 1% per year. An older person or a person with diabetes would probably need the largest font size and quite possibly a higher raise, because it would just take more to stimulate their fingers.
Is the kind of printer you're designing for residential use, will it have that kind of ability to increase the amount of material to raise it higher?
It might. How many people are familiar with the Swell paper and the old product called the Tactile Image Enhancer?
Yes.
Pictures in a flash. Those heating units, they use infrared heat to heat up the page, and where there's an image, the image drops more energy, and then there's a chemical reaction due to that heat, and then the paper bubbles up. And that's the technology that we're using for our first printer. We're also looking at rapid prototyping and whether we can incorporate those components into a printer. But our first printer will incorporate the Swell paper. What the special sauce, if you will be, is that it will integrate the printing technology with the heating technology, so all you have to do is press a button.
So it won't be using this wax then?
So it probably won't be using this wax.
Good.
You mentioned, I'm just curious, you mentioned that some of the technology that you're using is technology that has been developed by the NFB, and I'm just curious what their reaction has been to your research, since they are such hardcore proponents of Braille.
They're not particularly happy.
On some of those pages, there are numbers, and those numbers...
Is it the dot on top?
The ones with a dot on top are capital letters.
Those are capital A. Yeah,
and the ones that have a kind of a pointed top, those are numbers. So it would be 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And we used the clock or a symbol that looks like the number to, you know, lay those out.
The 3, it's right where the 3 would be. Okay.
Our research is geared towards developing a first version of this printer that can also print labels. There isn't a tactile printer out there now, so what is required in terms of a user interface, for example, is unknown. We're talking with people who have a visual impairment about how they might use this printer, but then also on a very specific basis, how they might interact with the printer. It may be, as John was talking about, the user interface for a normal inkjet printer. We might also have those sort of questions, like, do we want to host the whole user interface on a computer and have a person able to communicate with the printer that way? What buttons would we need? How do we reload the paper or reload supplies? The interviews, we just ran our pilot interviews, and we asked people about their daily lives and how they label products or how they interact with items in their household. I know I talked to Bob a little bit about that, and he said, well, it'd be helpful for me to label spices in my golf clubs. We're trying to figure out how best to do that. It might even include, like, what adhesives we need to use for golf clubs. If he's going to be, I doubt he'd be hitting the turf much with those golf clubs, but if he were, we would want something that was pretty durable so that it didn't come off on hole one when he needs it on hole three. But in terms of, like, spices, or a canned good, it might be that we want those labels to be kind of reattachable.
Or you could have the other possibility for cans is have magnetic labels, so you could reuse them.
We could talk further here, but I could also have kind of an in-depth interview with you guys at a later time with very specific protocols and a questionnaire that...
How much would be the printer if you have this printer available?
You know, we're shooting for a price of like $1,500, and it could be less than that. It might be a little more.
Well, just tell the name of the company.
The name of the company is Elia Life Technology, E-L-I-F-E. IA Life Technology. Elliot was my mother's and my grandmother's name. And if you're interested in learner's manuals or instruction manuals, then let me know and I can send you materials, and you can, if you'd like to learn it, I can provide that.
I suspect there might be a few people or more who would be interested in really getting more involved in this. So you mentioned that there could even be some payment for people doing, helping with the research?
Yes.
Do you typically work with individuals as opposed to groups?
The research requires that we work individually, right, but we can also, so. But we've also had classes where we taught the alphabet. One of the things that we haven't done is we haven't really gone out and taught a lot of people this alphabet, because until now we weren't close to commercializing like a printer or some device where people could print it themselves. But now that we're closer, now we're going out and we're talking with people and teaching people. We'll probably have a Kickstarter so that we can produce learner's manuals that are very durable, as opposed to what we have now, which is produced with the wax jet technology. Our technology will support, you know, the production of Braille, really, and in any font size if you want a larger font size. Because I think some Braille users, it's quite possible that they might read at twice the speed if the font size was a little larger. Ooh. And our technology, our printers might support that type of reading.
I would think lifelong Braille readers, it would be just the opposite.
My understanding is that people who have lost their vision kind of after the age of 15 have a difficult time learning Braille. And especially after the age of 21, you're not in the educational system and you don't have the resources to learn Braille. So it's kind of for people over the age of 21 up to, you know.
Were you talking before also about a refreshable display?
We are, yeah.
So on that one, if you have a digital file, you can print it out this way, or in Braille, any size of Braille, or you can print out the letters?
Yes.
To raise them also?
Yes.
What do you envision for that? I mean, are you at the point where you know how big it would be, or around when it would be available?
Well, I don't know when it'll be available, unfortunately. We haven't, like, announced that publicly or anything. We had a phase one and a phase two grant to develop that. We got it to the point where we can now apply for additional funding and then commercialize it. We'll be submitting that grant in September. If we won the grant, probably wouldn't get the funding until next June, and then probably a year from then. Unless we raise funding from some other source, or if our Kickstarter campaign did very well, then we could fund that independently of NIH, which is our primary. The tactile display, it's kind of been holy grail of, you know, everybody says, oh, I've got that technology and we're gonna commercialize it, then they don't. So we haven't really gone out there and said that we're going to do anything. Yeah, so we're not using piezoelectric cells. We're using actuation and the actuation is used sequentially through the screen, so we can use an actuator multiple times for the screen. That means that the screen is slower than the piezoelectric displays, but you can have more cells in it.
Can I ask where we are with the possible use of 3D printers to generate tactile? I looked into this and I was very discouraging the answers.
We've tried it, and we can create a very good tactile image, but in terms of translating a computer image to the page, there's some translation problems in terms of file format, and even in terms of control of the tactile output. Because it uses a printhead that's one dot, if you will. It's one point. And so in order to print something, it'd take a lot of time to print it, and it wouldn't be of the definition that you have on your page. So we're looking at that. Some of that technology might be very useful, especially because a lot of those components are off-the-shelf components. But we would probably want to incorporate something like an inkjet printer, or maybe a modified inkjet printer, and the kinds of materials that are typically used in a rapid prototype. I think whoever does it, if it's not us, would want to use a hybrid technology where you use rapid prototyping materials, but you use inkjet printing technology. Because you're going to get a better image that way, especially with like Braille. I think you'd need that. But rapid prototyping is very promising, and there's a lot of research there, and we're certainly doing some of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.